Welcome to Career Tours. This week, responding to vague feedback, chapter 2, How to Be More Collaborative, part 2. The questions this cast answers are, what do I do if I'm told to be more collaborative? What do I say if I'm told to be more collaborative? And what is collaborative anyway?
Folks, Mark here again with another public service announcement. We try to think of them not as ads. And that is, if you're thinking about behavior, because if you're thinking about feedback and being vague, people aren't talking in terms of behavior. They're talking in terms of emotions or attitudes or opinions or intent or all kinds of other things. But it's behavior that matters. And if you want to understand behavior better and how sometimes behaviors come in conflict, then you got to take Empty Disc. It's only $30 rather than $80, which is what it used to be because we got it from somebody else. And it'll tell you exactly how you behave, and it'll give you specific things to do, actual behaviors to engage in, like talking faster or slower, shorter or longer emails, all those kinds of things in detail, what we're known for, hopefully while you're listening. It will tell you the things to do to make yourself more effective with people who are different than you.
So last week, Andrew and I started to talk about why people might say that you're uncollaborative or tell you be more collaborative. And we divided the behaviors into three categories: causing a barrier to communication, stopping work from moving. And today we're going to start with the third category, and then we're going to go on to what you can do about it. So the third category is making work more difficult or less pleasant for those around you.
Yeah, Wendy. So the third category we're going to talk about is making work more difficult. And this is kind of the final of the three categories that we're talking about of behaviors that could be considered not collaborative. And that is when you make work difficult or more difficult for those around you. As we said earlier in last week's cast, it sometimes is easy to justify these behaviors, right? Because you're thinking about what your intention is and not how it could be perceived by others, how the actual behaviors are perceived. But the problem is, if you're getting a reputation for being uncollaborative, the downsides are outweighing the upsides. An example of this is not using the same format or program as other people use. Markdown is a program that helps you write more quickly, and the files are easily transmitted and can be opened by a multitude of other programs. It has a lot of benefits. If you know what it is, or it has a lot of benefits if you know what it is and how to use it. Microsoft Word, on the other hand, is bloated and inconsistent.
Hey, I took these words from someone's description on a website, okay? They weren't my words.
Yeah. Yeah. And bloated and inconsistent are probably subjective. But objectively, it does do this weird thing where it introduces hidden characters and messes up formatting and stuff. And so that's, you know, Markdown doesn't do that stuff. And so, you know, that being said, you know, Markdown is a superior program, is a better tool to use for whatever you're doing. But if your team uses Microsoft Word and have no clue what Markdown is or how to even open a file that you send in the .md format, then you insisting that Markdown is, you know, the right thing to use and you keep using it, even though no one knows how to open those files, that could be a reason that you're being called uncollaborative, because you're prioritizing what you think is better versus what everyone on the team is using.
And you will never persuade people that your idea is better if it's causing them more work, if it's making life more difficult for them right now. What you need to do is get them on side, get them to feel like you're working with them, and then you can start to persuade them, hey, I've got this idea, like it might solve these problems, like, and introduce it gently. That hitting people over the head with an idea is never a good way to persuade them to use something different.
No. And unless you've got one of those cool Inception machines, right?
Yes.
Whatever that thing was in the movie, you can plant ideas in people's heads.
Can you get us one of those?
I'm going to try.
Okay, good. So another example of this is consistent negativity in meetings. And pessimists, I count myself amongst the pessimists, will tell you that they avoid the pitfalls of life by seeing them and pointing them out ahead of time. Like, I will tell you the 87 things that will go wrong, and that means that only one of them will come to pass and 86 of them will be saved from because I saw them up ahead. You know, right. ICs will tell you that they hit high quality standards because they drill down to the nitty-gritty details.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, high Ds will tell you, I'm just telling you like it is when they point out the stupidity of your idea. But whatever your justification is, consistent negativity isn't helping. And if you don't think that you're consistently negative, but you've been told to be more collaborative in meetings, just try reacting positively to something. If you find it difficult, then you probably react negatively most of the time.
And I would even say this, Wendy, if you find it difficult, you probably have a tendency to react negatively. But if when we say, try reacting positively to the next, you know, thing that you hear in a meeting that's good or that's positive, and you think, I can't find anything positive, well, then you're probably consistently negative because you don't even see those positive things. And exactly. 90% of things that are said in meetings are good or productive or moving along. Some people are listening to this and going, Andrew, you haven't been to my meetings. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And for those of us who see the negative before the positive, it's hard. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody sees something, you immediately know why that won't work. And other people perceive that as you being negative about them or about their ideas. They don't see it as, oh, you just saved them from making a mistake. Right. They just feel like, oh, you just bashed me with a hammer again. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I don't want people to feel like we're saying, you know, you're wrong if all you see is negative behaviors. That's human nature. I mean, it's natural, or I should say it's not natural to see the positives, because if you think of, you know, human evolution, it's mm-hmm. fight or flight. We see the things that are potential dangers or potential, you know, things that could go wrong. And then, right, we amplify it even more when we're in a professional context, because usually those people who can see what's wrong, fix it, identify it, right, all of those are the people that get rewarded, mm-hmm. that get promoted, that can, you know, do more in the organization. I remember teaching a group of managers one time from a client. I told them kind of a similar thing, and they said, yeah, I mean, that's right, Andrew. And then we get promoted and we're managers. But what's even more is we're accountants too, which means that's our whole life is finding what's wrong, not what's right, not what's good. So collaboration literally means to work together, right? Co-labor, right? There are many of us though who prefer to work alone, despite what some people say in job interviews, right? We would rather just say, you know, give me the whole job, I'll do it myself. It's better than having to deal with the back and forth of including someone else's opinions, thoughts, and ideas, having to persuade them that what they're thinking is wrong and that we're right. And we just think that this is better. And we think that it's better, even if we're not overly task focused, if we do have a little bit of people focus, we think, well, this is better for them, mm-hmm. right?
I'm then doing they their work
get to,
for them.
Yeah, I'm doing their work for them. They get to go work on something else. They get to do, you know, whatever, right? I'm doing them a benefit. But it may be better for them. It may be better for you, but it's not better for the organization. The reason organizations exist is because we can accomplish more together than we can as individuals. And this is another example of sub-optimizing the parts to optimize the whole. Despite the difficulties sometimes with working with other people, we need to do it.
Sometimes I hate to write this stuff, but it's true. If you can't get something done with someone else, you will only ever get done what you can get done.
Yeah.
And the world will be poorer for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we want to do is stop these negative behaviors. And it's difficult to both stop negative behaviors and increase positive behaviors at the same time. And a bunch of positive behaviors will not drown out a bunch of negative behaviors. It's like having a bad diet and then going to the gym. Going to the gym does not outweigh the fries that you had for breakfast, or the ice cream that you had for breakfast. So you want to try and stop the negative behaviors before you try and add a whole bunch of positive ones. It's also good psychology of changing behavior to do it that way. But in the case of collaboration, a lot of the negative behaviors are not doing something. So you can stop not doing something by doing something. So you quickly move on to the whole positives.
That's right.
You end up there by yourself.
Right, exactly. Which takes us to replacing negative behaviors with positive ones. And the first category is with communication. Surprise, surprise, right? We're going to talk about communication. You cannot collaborate or work with someone if you're not communicating. That's how we work with other people, is we communicate. So once you've removed the barriers that you've been putting up preventing effective communication, it's time to start over communicating. This will be a significant increase in the amount of communication that you're doing, most likely, because most people don't communicate enough. This means sending status updates, even when you've updated the system, even when you've updated the tracking sheet, right? Sending a little, pinging the person and saying, hey, just so you know, this is done. I've marked the sheet, right? It's not about relying on them to go and look. It's sending them those updates because that's what they need in order to move to their next part. And maybe they don't even need, maybe they're not the next person in line, but it's helpful for them to know that this is done.
It's coming closer.
It's coming closer, exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And send those updates by the communication method that that person uses most.
Absolutely.
So if somebody emails you most, use email. If they instant message you most, use that. If they text you, use that. I don't know what other things there are up, but people tend to use the communication method that is their preference. And going towards them a little by using their preference for communicating will add to their feeling that you are actively working with them.
Yeah, I have a small little example of this. I have a good friend. We have each other's cell phone numbers. We've texted each other several times, but for some reason, sometimes he'll send me messages on LinkedIn. And I think that's not
what?
That's not where you what? And I don't know what it is. I haven't even until just now thought of it to ask him, but every time I get one from him, I'm like, maybe he's just in LinkedIn and sees my name and then wants thinks of it to reach out, but I think to myself, I mean, you've got my number, dude, right? It's just interesting.
That does seem odd. However,
it does. That's why it stuck in my brain.
Now you say that. Mark has a couple of people that do that too. They always send him a LinkedIn message.
Right.
You realize he never logs into LinkedIn.
Right.
It's just hilarious. If you want to send Mark a message, mahorseman@manager-tools.com.
Yes, not LinkedIn.
Not LinkedIn. Doesn't work.
No.
No. I'm laughing so much, I've got tears in my eyes. And I can't see the notes. Okay. It means inviting people to meetings even when you don't want to hear from them. There are
what?
People I don't want to hear your thoughts on my idea. My idea is brilliant. I don't want to hear it. And sometimes you invite someone to a meeting so they can hear what's said. It's not even that you want to hear their input, it's so they can hear what's said. And a lot of people will say, look, I'm not going to invite people to more meetings because we've all got too many meetings. Well, first of all, the high eyes don't agree with you. They haven't got enough meetings. But you can help people decide whether or not they want to come. So here's an example. Steve, I've invited you to the kickoff meeting. The agenda's attached. I know your team will be involved with the testing phase. So if you prefer, you can just come for 10:30 to 11. That's when we're going to cover kickoff testing. If you'd prefer to send one of your team, or if it's better for you to get a briefing afterwards, just let me know. I'm happy to make it work for you and happy for you to see the whole thing if that's beneficial to you. And yes, it takes way longer to type all of that out.
I was just going to say, Wendy, doesn't that take much longer?
I could have just sent the invite, right? But it also gives Steve, in this case, an understanding of what the meeting is and why he might want to be there and some alternate options. Making it easy for him is collaboration.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be honest, Wendy, maybe this is me being a high eye. I don't think this is a hard sell. I think that everyone who's listening to this has gotten an invite at some time in their past and said to themselves or the people that work around them, what is this meeting? Yeah. Why am I being invited to this? What is this all about? To have a few sentences of additional context, additional information, and yeah, I mean, sometimes you can put that in the body of the invite, sure. But I'll tell you, we're talking about communication, relationships, getting results. A personal quick note like this that says, this is why this is important for you, and this is what, you know, what you can do with it. You can come to just this part, you can send a proxy, you can, all of those things, that goes a long way. And I think, you know, if you think about yourself on the flip side of this, if you were Steve in this situation, I'd really like to get that
someone's
additional
thinking
note
of me and my time. Yeah.
Right. And if you're sending this on Instant Message or Slack, you're getting this probably before you even get invite.
Yeah, exactly.
So now when you get it, there is not even a moment of what is this thing? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this is that thing.
Yeah, exactly. That thing you warned me about. The other thing that is really effective is if you send somebody a meeting invite for an hour, sending them information either in the invite or outside of it that says, I don't think we'll need an hour. I think we can be done in 45 minutes, or I think we can be done in 30 minutes. I just want to block out the time. Because if somebody thinks, oh God, it's going to take an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and they're expecting you to take the full 60 minutes, they're less likely to accept because it's a whole hour. Whereas if you tell them it's probably not going to take that long, I just want to have some buffer, then they're like, oh, okay. You know, it's a different conversation.
And just pure logistics, they may have something at the top of the hour. And so if they think there's a chance they're going to be late to that thing, they could decline it. But knowing, having that additional information, knowing that, oh, that's not going to take a full hour, or they don't want to, you know, maybe they have to consider, I mean, it's probably more rare nowadays, but I remember working in an office, you had to also consider, you know, where, what building was it in, right? Yeah. Travel time, walking to, walking from. That's all important. So that's important information, even if you don't understand why it's important to them.
Yes. Yeah. One more. Scheduling time to talk. So peer one-on-ones are not successful because they follow the one-on-one format. They're successful because they give two individuals an opportunity to communicate, to get to know each other's working styles, and to collaborate. So if there's anybody that you work with where your work and their work hit together, look up peer one-on-ones on the website and follow the instructions. And it works wonderfully.
Absolutely.
Folks, if you're having to respond to vague feedback, that means your manager probably doesn't know how to give feedback based on behavior. I could talk about feedback and behavior and professionalism for hours, but I'll make it simple. If you've got a boss who's doing this to you, well, they don't know any better. They haven't studied, whatever. Let's not blame them. But let's put down on our Delta file, and if you don't know what that is, there's a podcast for that, that when you become a manager, you're going to know what you're doing. And the way to do that is come to our Effective Manager Conference. If you have designs on getting promoted and becoming a manager, if you're an individual contributor, or if you're already a manager and you're listening to this cast and you're thinking, yeah, sometimes my feedback is really vague, the answer is the Effective Manager Conference. Come to the website. We've got it on video, we've got it virtually, and we've got it in person.
Our next category is facilitate workflow. So if preventing work from going ahead is, call it anti-collaborative behavior, then facilitating workflow is the collaborative opposite. This means being available, being willing and able to take work when it's reached you. It means keeping track of it, being aware and working to deadlines, reaching the standards that are needed. It means letting people know when work is ready for them or when the work is passing to them in a format that allows them to do their work quickly and easily. This is like that molding machine example, right? That's what the molding machine in that factory does. It passes the work, you know, down the line.
And it spits out in a way that the next machine can receive.
Right, exactly. And you're more than a machine, though, right? You can do more to facilitate workflow. You're not just passing it down, right? You're not, it's not a, sequencing thing, you can do more. You can do it, pass it along, and then give other people the heads up. Like I mentioned earlier about, okay, so now, you know, I'm passing this on to Wendy, but also, you know, Sarah, that means it's coming to you, mm-hmm. you know, in a short order. And so creating cheat sheets or information briefings or executive summaries on things so that other people understand the work that you're doing more easily. Volunteer information, volunteer to help them help you. Show them, you know, how you get the data into the right format so that you can work more quickly on it. Ask, would it help if I did this, right? Asking for input and using that input is going to help facilitate workflow, which is very helpful, very collaborative.
Indeed. So the last one is make work easier or more pleasant for others. So thinking about what others need from you and then supplying it, even when they haven't asked for it. So like when we teach children how to hand a knife to somebody else, we teach them to give the handle first because otherwise the other person has to grab the knife by the blade and it's much more likely that that person's going to get injured. And that's an obvious safety behavior, but it's not just that children don't understand safety, that we have to teach them this. Children don't have the capacity to put themselves in someone else's shoes. They can't imagine being the recipient of the knife and reaching out and thinking, oh gosh, if I was in that person's shoes, I'd have to grab the blade and that would be bad. They can't. Mm-hmm. They believe their mind only has one track and that's inside their own heads. So you're an adult, we hope. And so instead of being an unthinking child, you can think about the people around you and ask yourself, what can you do to make work easier for them? How can you give it to them to make it easier? How can you give them the heads up? How can you make it in a format that works for them, you know, make it easier.
I mean, I think of this as kind of along the lines of Stephen Covey's begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Right. It may not be the end, but it's the end of your process. It's the beginning of someone else's process. And so what's going to make the most sense for them when they pick up this work? Right. I love your example about, you know, children and a knife or scissors, right? You teach them to give them the handle. I constantly remind my young children that when dad's doing the laundry, like, I need you to turn your clothes right side out. Like, don't leave your clothes inside out. You're like a banshee. You just fly, you know, clothes off, and then I've got to turn them right side out. But they don't get it. They just don't, right? We as adults can practice that additional, I would even consider it, this is going to sound a little touchy-feely, it's empathy, right?
Yes.
You're thinking of someone else and what they've got to do.
And so much of the time, it isn't something different. It's not. So oh, one of the things I was thinking of while we were talking about this is the tubs that we ship to conferences. So we ship a tub which has decks so that what's going to be given to presenters, it has markers in it, and it has a doohickey that puts the deck on the wall.
Projector.
A projector.
Yep.
Whoa. Had no idea what that word was. And one of the things when I did this job temporarily, because I'm not very good at it, was I would just put the decks in the tub. And then Mark said, hey, it's much easier for me if you put the ones for day two at the bottom of the tub and put the ones for day one at the top of the tub. I was like, well, I could do that. You know, it makes no difference.
It's going in anyways.
It's all going in anyway. Yeah. All I have to do is pay a little bit more attention and put day two at the bottom and day one on the top. So a lot of the time, what will make someone else's life easier is not any more difficult for you. It doesn't have to be that you spend another 40 hours a week making work easier for someone else. It's a little bit of thinking often.
You know, to that end, Wendy, a lot of what we can do to promote a congenial working environment instead of a combative one is just small things like the language that we use, right? The words we use. It's so simple to use and instead of but. We have a cast on that. To ask people rather than telling them.
Would you do this for me, please?
Yeah. To use the language that they use rather than, you know, acronyms or terminology that is used within your team, maybe, and they don't necessarily understand that. Or just as simple as waiting for others to finish before you speak, right? The one breath rule. Or to agree or positively affirm ideas that you agree with out loud.
Instead of just thinking it and then only expressing yourself when it's negative.
Like, yes, exactly. Think
that you're hammering them when actually you're agreeing with them 50% of the time. Well, if you say it out loud, they recognize the 50-50.
Yeah, the out loud part is important because even if you're on, I mean, if you're on a Zoom call and you're one of 20 faces on a screen, you may think I'm nodding and I'm saying, I'm agreeing. Well, no one's looking. I mean, you can't see. It's so subtle if your face is the size of a postage stamp on their screen that you're nodding. So saying, yes, I agree. I concur. You know, those are helpful things. Yeah, good idea. So compromise when you can. If it isn't something critical and it matters to someone else, then let them have it, but not in a begrudging way, but pleasantly, as if that's what you wanted all along. Look for those opportunities to have everyone win and not just you.
And we all have good reasons for the behavior that we choose to employ. If there wasn't a good reason for it, whether we know what that reason is or not, we wouldn't do it. We'd do something else. But that doesn't always mean it's the most effective behavior. It doesn't mean that others will see the behavior as we mean it. How often do you say, I didn't mean it that way? Yeah. But working in an organization is all about collaboration, like working to achieve something together, which is more than what we can achieve alone. And if you can't learn to collaborate, you won't ever be successful. And if you can't learn behaviors that other people think of as collaborative, It's not even that you have to be collaborative, like that you have to have this sense of, I work with other people. I enjoy working with other people. I still don't enjoy working with other people. I'd much rather work on my own. There has to be two people on this podcast. So. but I can do those behaviors. They're not natural. And, you know, people are fooled. People will see the behavior and believe that you are collaborative. Whether you believe you are, whether you want to be, it doesn't matter. It's the end goal. And you can have whatever thoughts you want inside your own head, but just do the behavior.
Yeah, yeah. The characterization of the behavior is not important. What's important is what are the behaviors. And sometimes you're going to get feedback that doesn't point to a specific behavior, and you need to infer. And you know, what we're trying to help with this, and really with this whole series, is how can you do that most effectively? And this is how.
This is why there's two people on this podcast, because you said it better than I did. And that's why we need other people. It's like we planned that and we said
it. That's right.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.